5 past 9 on a Tuesday morning, and it means it's time for The Law and You. And we're joined this morning, and it's a very good morning, to John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. Good morning, John.
Yeah, g'day, Cole. Great to be back for The Law and You, and how wonderful to be back after a big week of radiothon for 4CRB.
Yes, it was. It was a fantastic week. We all had a lot of fun. We also we're all very fatigued, but we enjoyed our time.
And most importantly, we had a successful outcome to Radiothon, and a very big thank you goes to all of our supporters out there for their huge generosity towards 4CRB. And of course, a special thank you to all of our wonderful staff and volunteers who worked tirelessly in the lead up to Radiothon and beyond.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it still goes on. We've got quite a bit still coming through the door, and we're going to be ringing all of those wonderful prize winners very shortly this morning and congratulating them.
Well done. Well, this is The Law and You, and we're back to our normal programming on 4CRB. And as always, it's your opportunity to get free legal advice between now and 9:30. That's 10:30 Tweed Coast time. All we need you to do is get on that telephone as soon as you possibly can. Our number, 5520888. That number again, 5520888. Please don't leave it to the last 5 minutes or so of the program, where invariably we get a bank up of calls, we're often having to deal with those off-air. We would much rather take your calls on-air so we can not only answer your question, but of course also answer the questions of those who are listening but may not be in a position to make a call. Don't forget, you can send questions through to TalkBack at 4CRB.com. Otherwise, you can call us on 5520888. And of course, if you live south of the Tweed River, don't forget to throw 07 in front of that number. Cole, we did have an email that came in during the week in relation to a family law matter, which you kindly passed on to me. But I did actually have Margaret Miller send a detailed response to the person who made that inquiry. It was a little bit complicated to deal with on The Law and You. And so just to let you know and our listeners that that we have responded in relation to that email with some positive advice about some steps that might be able to be taken in relation to that.
It did look very complex indeed.
But in the meantime, 5520888 is the number. People are probably sick of ringing that number in the week just gone by. But this morning, if you have a legal question or a query, you can get some free advice by calling us this morning.
Well, we've got our first caller, John, and it is Paul joining us this morning.
Paul, fantastic. Good morning, Paul. How are you today?
Good, thanks, John. Look, just a quick thing, mate. I live in a caravan park, and for several years we were charged between $23, $27, up to $32 a month to get our power read, and then it suddenly cut off, and I figured that maybe that was illegal. Would I be in a position to claim back the illegal charges over the previous few years?
So is the situation that they were charging you just to have the meter read as opposed to the power charges?
That's right, just to read the meter.
Yeah, look, I would suspect that may not be permissible. What I would suggest you do is give Consumer Affairs a call, or the Department of Fair Trading, the Office of Fair Trading.
Yeah.
Have you got a pen? Are you in Queensland or New South Wales?
I'm in Queensland.
Okay, so if you've got a pen handy, I'll give you the number.
Yep, far away, John.
137468. I do have a feeling that charging for the reading of the meter is in fact not allowed, that they can only pass on the actual cost of the electricity. It would be a good idea to check with Consumer Affairs in relation to that. Do you have a residence association in the park where you live, Paul?
No.
Okay, well, if that's the case, then I would I would suggest that you give Consumer Affairs a call and see
right.
What they can tell you. But it very well may be that you can make a claim for those costs back.
Okay. Thanks very much for your help, John.
Okay, Paul. All the very best. And the time on 4CRB is marching along. It's presently just coming up to 12 minutes past 9. That's past 10 on the Tweed. 5520888 is our telephone number if you have a question or a query.
And, John, we have Mary on the phone for you.
Good morning, Mary. How are you today?
Very good, thank you. Just a query,
please. How can I help you today?
My partner just sold his resident place and was supposed to get clear after the agent took his commission, $350,000. Now, yesterday, it settled on Wednesday. Now we got the report of what happened. And we are a bit surprised that we were about 10,000 short than what we thought. The question is this, please, John. What is home and land convincing? It's almost 11,000. Is that correct, please?
Well, that I'm not exactly sure what home and land conveyancing is. If the suggestion is that that's the legal cost that you were charged in relation to the sale of your property, of the property, then that for a 300... How much? What was the actual sale price on the contract, Mary?
358,000.
Right,
the,
okay.
The agent said he only take half the commission.
Mm-hmm.
To get the sale through, so we cleared 350,000. So on
right,
the contract,
okay, right.
Okay. Did I answer you right?
Yes, you did. So, Mary, did your partner have a lawyer acting for him in relation to the sale?
Yes. Oh, yes. Of course. We have this report from our lawyer, which I've been using in Queensland. I've been using him myself for 20 years. And,
I think you need to go back to him and ask him what that fee is, because I can't think of any reason why there would have been any amount payable. There was no mortgage on the property at all?
No, that's correct. No.
Okay.
This is why I'm surprised. And I thought, John, I always listen to you. This is one of the best program for CIB have with you. Thank you. And I thought before I ring them, the solicitor, I see what you think. Because I didn't think it was right, but then I am a very naive person, and you seem to be not sure about it either.
No, I've never heard of that before. The only things that should have come out of your settlement or out of your partner's settlement, Mary, would be obviously the agent's commission, and you've said that he agreed to take a half commission, which was, you say, was $8,000, leaving a balance of $350,000. The only other things that would have come out, there would have been adjustments for rates, and that would have been a plus adjustment to your partner if he'd paid the rates in advance, or a minus adjustment if the rates were presently unpaid. Was it a unit? Was it a strata title property, or is it freehold?
Yes. It's
okay, so there might have been an adjustment for the body corporate levies.
Correct.
Would be a plus or a minus. But other than that, the only other cost that you should have incurred would be the solicitor's fee for acting in relation to the sale, and for a sale at $350,000, I would have thought that the cost on sale would be less than $1,000.
Okay, that's what I thought, John. You made us very happy. We are an old couple, meaning because we paid body corporate in advance and rates in advance, we thought the refund would cover possibly the almost $1,000 solicitor for his work, which would be my ask even, which you just mentioned. So you can imagine, it's exactly $10,955 home and land convincing. And I
convincing, yes. No, well,
this is not right.
If you've been charged, definitely not right. So you need to take that up with your solicitor to find out
what
it is. And if you're not satisfied with what your solicitor is saying in relation to it, I would be recommending that you call the Queensland Law Society.
Okay. Well, I'll do it today. If not, I ring again next week, if you don't mind, John, and give me the phone number. We are old people. Yeah. We don't know how to get phone numbers like that. But yeah, you've been very helpful, and I don't feel I'm making a fool of myself ringing a solicitor when I listen to your program this morning. Okay, thank you very much, John. You're the best.
Okay then, Mary. All the very best. How are we going for callers there, Cole?
Well, the board is clear, John.
Excellent. So, well, not excellent. I mean, obviously, we want some, we want more calls coming in because that's the whole object of the program. But it does give me the opportunity to catch up on a few things that I've been trying to speak about over the last few weeks and haven't been able to. One of the ones that I thought was critically important to mention is the increase in cyber fraud that is going on with people receiving emails suggesting that they're from their bank or from some other organisation and asking for their bank details or asking for credit card details, emails that suggest that they may have come from a telco, that they've got a bill in arrears and they need to pay. And above everything else, if you get an email which doesn't look right and you think, hang on, I don't owe any money for this, or why do they want to know my my bank login details, or why do they want my credit card details, the thing that you should do before responding to those messages is to ring your bank or ring your telco or whatever it may be and ask them whether that message was actually sent and endeavour to deal with it over the telephone. Do not take the telephone number that may be in the message you receive, because that very well may be a telephone number that is linked to the fraudsters, and they will simply answer the phone and further mislead you. So look up the telephone number of the organisation, the company that you're trying to get in touch with, either in the phone directory or alternatively via their website on the internet, so that you can make sure that you you deal with that. The other thing that's happening too, and this is more particularly in relation to workplaces, is the incidence of cyber attack. And this can go to large or small business. So it doesn't matter whether you have a big business or a small business, where you get an email which purports to be from one of your staff saying something like, I'm out of the office at the moment, can you please pay the attached bill, or something of that nature. I've known of a number of these emails coming into organisations that I'm associated with, both not-for-profit and for-profit businesses. And if you click on those links, it can present a world of pain. There have been instances where doctors' surgeries have accidentally clicked on a link on an email that's been received into the doctor's surgery, and it has had the effect of completely freezing them out of all of their patient records. And then what happens is they then receive an email from the people responsible for this attack saying, unless you deposit $10,000 in Bitcoin or whatever to this account, we won't open your account up again. And the unfortunate thing about it is that these cyber attacks are very complex, and the result can be that you would spend far more financially trying to get someone to unlock your computer, if it can in fact be done at all, than the cost of paying the ransom. And basically these sorts of emails are referred to as ransomware. So whatever you do, be extremely vigilant. Whether it be a text message or an email that you receive, be extremely vigilant before clicking on any links. How are we going there for callers, Cole?
We have Graham on the phone for you, John.
Great.
Oh, how are you going, John?
Good morning. Going well, Graham. What about you?
Yeah, mate. You want a couple of hip operations? You got a spare knee, or what? What do you need, John?
All right, my son splitting with his wife, who he got off the internet 4 years ago, married the woman. She's got three girls, which are an arm and a leg to keep going, and he can't settle down with those three girls. They're just arrogant. They're ruined the whole situation. So he's parting with the woman, and he's renting a house that we set up for him, and we need the house sold, actually. Now, the question is, what liability is he up for when he divorces this woman, John?
Right, well, it will depend on a number of factors, Graham, including the length of time that they were married.
4 years. 4 years.
4 years. A question of what they each brought into the marriage. So, in other words, if she came in with nothing and her three daughters, and there's been no substantial change to her health in that time, and there's been no child born of the relationship, or she's not pregnant at the present time, then it shouldn't be too bad for him. Did he enter into a binding financial agreement before they got together?
No.
Right, okay. So what I would suggest that he does, Graham, he needs to get advice from a family lawyer as soon as possible for two things. The primary one would be to look at the issue of property settlement and how that's best dealt with. How long have they been separated now?
No, they've only just started, John.
You've got to be separated for 12 months.
12 months,
before
right.
you can commence divorce proceedings. Yeah. So what he may be well advised is to get some advice in relation to his financial obligations to this woman, if any, so that he can fully understand what he may or may not be up for. He can commence proceedings for a property settlement if that's required, and that would depend on what assets he actually has.
He's got nothing. He only leases a car. He only leases a car.
Okay, well, if that's the case, then, Graham, he very well may be best to simply wait out the 12 months, get divorced, and then it's another 12 months after that for the property settlement. But recommending is that he gets some advice straight away. Does he live on the Gold Coast?
No, up Harvey Bay.
Okay, what I would suggest he does is take a look on the internet for whether there's a free legal advice service in either Harvey Bay or Maribor. And he could go in and hopefully see a lawyer there free of charge to get some advice in relation to that. The other thing that you need to consider, Graham, is your will, to make sure that your will is not leaving anything directly to your son. Ensure that you have a will that leaves any interest that he's going to receive into a testamentary discretionary trust, so that it does not become his property in the unlikely event that you were to pass away before the property settlement is finalised.
So if I pass away before 2 years, she can get some of the action, John?
No, if you've got a will that provides that your estate goes into a testamentary discretionary trust, and that trust has been properly constituted, so it's not simply a case of just putting it into a testamentary trust, you've got to make sure that the testamentary trust is set up correctly. And one of the big issues the family court looks at in relation to testamentary trust are the elements of control in relation to the trust. So, for example, if you set a trust up and your son's the trustee, your son's the primary beneficiary, and your son's the appointor, you might as well just leave it straight to him, because that trust would be completely ineffective. So it's very, very important that the trust is set up properly. All right, then.
If he's a trustee, John, yeah. All right. Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
Well, there's
thanks,
a number
John.
Of factors, Graham, but it's very most advisable that you get competent legal advice on it.
Is he
all right,
able to? Yeah, sorry, just one other thing, John. Is he up for, if she leaves the property, he still has to pay for the children's education and stuff like that?
No, not necessarily, because if she came into the relationship with those children,
they're not his, of course.
And they're not his children. It's only been a period of 4 years. then I would think it unlikely that he's going to have to do that. But as I say, he needs to get some advice quickly in relation to the matter.
All right, that's great, John.
All right.
Thanks very
Graham.
Much. Cheer out.
All the very best. And the time on 4CRB is just coming up to 27 minutes past 9, past 10 on the Tweed. Laura New is the program. How are we going for callers there, Cole?
We have Anne on the phone for you, John.
Thank you. Good morning, Anne. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you, John. How are you?
Very well indeed. How can I help you today?
I've just got a couple of questions about a will.
Sure.
My husband and I had wills in favour of each other, and if we'd predeceased, it would go to the children, right? My husband died a couple of years ago, and now I know I've got to do a new will, but somebody pointed out to me the other day that they invalidated the will completely, and I just didn't agree, so I thought I'd ask you.
The questions invalidate the will, or the passing of your husband invalidates the will?
Well, this friend said the passing of him invalidated the will, and I said
that is definitely wrong.
Right, yep. I thought so. Now, the other question was...
By the way, the only thing that invalidates the will is marriage.
Well, that was what
the will is made in contemplation of the marriage. Otherwise, if you get divorced, your will is not invalidated. It just means that your former spouse can no longer be the executor or a beneficiary.
Yep. No, that's fine. That's what I thought exactly. Now, the other question was, this friend said that because I'd moved... I was no longer at the address that was stated in the will. That also invalidated it. Is that correct?
No, it doesn't. No, it does not.
No. I couldn't think that it would because, I mean, so many people move, you know, so often. And I thought, God, if everybody's got to make a new will every time they move. No,
There'd be a lot of very rich lawyers out there.
No, thank you, John. That clarifies it all anyway. I know I've got to make a new one, but... We were just in this discussion.
Well, you may not have to make a new will, Anne. What I would suggest you do is, by all means, get your will checked. But if your will said that you leave everything to your husband and if he fails to survive, then you leave it to your children, that will is certainly still valid. The only issue that you may be wanting to look at is the circumstances of your children and whether their circumstances... may warrant you reconsidering how you leave your estate to your children.
Yes.
So it'd certainly be worthwhile getting your will checked. You may or may not need to update it depending on your circumstances.
Thank you very much, John. Much appreciated.
Okay, then, Anne. All the very best.
Bye.
Bye now. Well, Cole, have we got any more callers there or we're getting pretty close to the local news, I think?
We are indeed, and the board is clear, John.
Excellent. That's what it's not what we'd like to hear, but at this particular time in the program it is. So just something very quick to finish on, and that is an interesting topic of who decides where you are buried and what funeral arrangements are made for you. And it's been brought to light as a result of a number of cases in recent times which have primarily involved First Nations people, and as our listeners would undoubtedly know, being buried on country is a very important thing for First Nations people. And it does underscore the importance of ensuring that you provide clear instructions in your will, or at the very least to your family, about what your funeral wishes are. And most importantly, things such as paying for a headstone, if that's what you intend to do, or for a memorial stone, and importantly, paying for the wake, if you wish to have a wake, a celebration of your life afterwards, because those things are not automatically things that can be dealt with, and it's important that you leave direction to your executor, who is the person who becomes responsible for those things after your passing. I'm John Tradgley from the Bell Legal Group. It's been great to be with you this morning for another program of The Law and You. I look forward to being back with you, of course, next week for another program. Thanks, Cole, for being my panel operator this morning. Appreciate your assistance. And
You're
until
welcome.
Next week, it's goodbye and God bless.